everything. Meg sighed. I suppose it would be ungrateful of me not to tell you about it.
Worse, it could be dangerous.
All right, she said. I guess it's time, and I've had just enough to drink. 15. Meg took another swig of her brandy, and her tongue thus loosened, she began. Gino and I met at Stanford, and had what for that time would pass as a torrid affair. He was more attractive then, less bullish-looking, slender, and at times quite funny. He got me through my coding courses, being something of a prodigy, where I was klutzy. I had good ideas for what the software should do, but I was not good at telling it how. Gino sort of came behind me with a broom and a dustpan and made my ideas work. We were a good team, two sides of the same coin. I also took a lot of business courses, and I was way ahead of him in that regard. I planned for several years to do a startup, and when I was getting ready, I finally told him about it. He went nuts, accusing me of shutting him out of the profits that should come from his work. I took a hard line. I told him I would give him 5% of the company, and he could buy another 5%, and that if he objected to that, he could pay for the whole 10%. He borrowed money to scrape up the investment. What I didn't know was that he borrowed it from a guy who was a loan shark. By the time we got the company operating smoothly, I had to loan Gino the money to pay off his lender, and his investment ended up costing him twice what it should have. I saw that his debt to me was paid from the proceeds of the sale, and I made sure that in the transaction he didn't get to keep any of his stock, whereas I hung on to 45% of mine. By the time of the sale, I had managed to shunt him aside from the self-driving car to another product with much less promise. After the sale, my new partners insisted I drop development on that product, and Gino was just sitting at a desk, doing not much of anything. I hadn't cheated him, but I hadn't been very kind to him either. Our affair had ended a couple of years before, and he had married Veronica, a very sharp cookie, who brought out the worst in him. She's certainly a partner, or even a moving force, in any criminality he's involved in. Finally, I made it impossible for him not to resign, and he did. What I didn't know was that he took copies of all the software on the car project, and although I had changed all the passwords, he managed to hack into our system and steal them.
Stone interrupted. That's when you should have called the police.
I couldn't do it, Meg replied. Not because I didn't want to or didn't have the guts, but because I was in hot negotiations to sell the company. The kind of news we would have made in Silicon Valley would have blown that for me, and I didn't have the development money to continue the project without a sale. So I didn't call in the authorities, and my lawyers tell me it's too late now, that Gino could make a case for at least partial ownership of the software, thus having the right to access it. Now I'm stuck with Gino lying in wait around every corner, metaphorically speaking.
Not entirely metaphorically, Stone said. He's already made two attempts on your life, and the last one came very close to success. If Dino hadn't had the presence of mind to interfere, and the weapon, you and I would both be food for the gulls on Loggerhead Key.
That was very timely of Dino, Meg agreed.
And not for the first time, Stone said. He and I have a history of his pulling my fat from the fire, not to mention my ass.
That's a good friend to have, Meg said. I wish I had one like him.
Stick around, Stone replied. Gino sat at his computer in his and Veronica's hotel suite.
Meg is in New York, he said.
pointing at his screen. "Where?" Veronica asked, looking over his shoulder. "A hotel?"
"Let me try Google World," Gino said, then watched as the satellite shot zoomed in on the signal from Meg's cell phone. "I can't figure out what this is," he said. "It's not marked as a hotel. It must be a house. A townhouse."
"Well, after we've looked at apartments today, let's see if we can find it. The desk just called. The car is waiting for us downstairs."
Gino grabbed his jacket. "Then let's go find a place to live."
It was a condo on Park Avenue, in a new building. Gino had steered the agent away from a co-op, since the board would do a background check and demand tax returns, an area where his background was spotty. This condo was promising. Around 4,000 square feet on two floors, high up, if not quite the penthouse. The views were up and down Park Avenue, west to the park and east to the river. It was the show apartment for the building and was, thus, nicely furnished.
"What do you think?" he asked Veronica.
"I think it meets our current standards," she replied. "We can always move up later."
Gino haggled for the furnishings, then signed a sales contract. "When can we move in?" he asked the salesman.
"The minute your check clears," the man said.
Gino wrote a $9 million check, signed it, and handed it over.
"Walk this to your bank and get it cleared," he said. "We'll wait here."
"I should mention that there are no linens included, sheets and towels, if you're planning to sleep here tonight."
Veronica spoke up. "While you're clearing the check, I'll run over to Bloomingdale's and stock up. Do we need pots and pans, too?"
"Yes, and small appliances. Toaster, coffee maker."
"Bloomies has it all." She rode down in the elevator with the salesman.
"Is his check really going to clear?" he asked her.
"You bet your ass it is," she replied. "He's an impatient man, so be quick about it."
He introduced her to the man on the desk and the doorman, then shook her hand and hailed a cab. Veronica got into their rented Mercedes and headed for 59th and Lex. Gino strolled around the apartment, taking another look at it. There was a nice study with bookcases, filled with some books by the yard. They each had a dressing room and bath. He liked the mattress. Home sweet home. Half an hour later, the agent walked in, handed him the ownership documents, the rules of the building, and a fistful of keys.
"Nice doing business with you, Mr. Bellini," he said, and got out of there.
Veronica got hold of a personal shopper at Bloomingdale's and roamed the store while the shopper made lists of her purchases. When she couldn't think of anything else to buy, she wrote a check for her goods, extracted a promise of immediate delivery, and left for their hotel, where she quickly packed their bags and checked out. Back at her new building, she asked the concierge to find her a housekeeper, then went upstairs, where she found Gino opening boxes from Bloomie's.
"Everything go okay?" she asked him.
He tossed her a set of keys.
"We're in business, babe, and Miss Meg will soon be out of business."
16. Stone had awakened that morning and discovered two dogs in bed with them. He moved them gently off so as not to wake Meg, then ordered breakfast from Helene. Shortly the dumbwaiter chimed, and he woke Meg with a kiss on the ear.
"What's that I smell?" she asked.
"Homemade sausages," he replied, "and scrambled eggs, orange juice, muffins, and coffee."
He switched on the morning news shows.
"You're an information freak, aren't you?" she asked.
You betcha. I have to know what's going on. Shall I tell you how your day is going to work?
Please do.
Fred is yours for the day. Let me explain about him. He's British, but he came to me from a French friend who gave me a year of him. Within the first week, I had hired him permanently.
What's his background?
Military. He was a regimental sergeant major in the Royal Marines, and after retirement did some security work. He's a lot tougher than his size and appearance would indicate, and absolutely fearless.
Can I borrow a gun from you? I'd feel better carrying it.
Do you have a New York City license to carry a concealed weapon?
Of course not.
Then you may not have a gun. Unlicensed possession in this city carries a prison sentence. Fred, however, is licensed and a crack shot into the bargain, and the Bentley is very nicely armored.
Why do you have an armored car? She asked.
I bought my first one from a Mercedes dealer who had ordered it built for a client who needed it sooner than he had planned. It was arranged for me to buy it from his widow. I was in an awful accident with it, and the armor saved my life. Strategic Services sold me the Bentley. They have a division that armors vehicles.
They're the ones who provided security for us in Key West?
Correct. And they will discreetly follow your car and accompany you in and out of shops or wherever else you want to go. They are also armed, and they have photographs of Gino Bellini. He handed her a business card. If you want to look at apartments or houses, call Margot Goodale, who will set that up for you.
Sounds like I'll have a full day, Meg said.
Feel free to make calls from any phone in the house. If you need secretarial services, see Joan. She's the very best at what she does.
If I find an apartment I like, what's the procedure?
You sign an offer and give Margot some earnest money. Condos are the easiest to buy quickly. Co-ops require a lengthy application process, a sight of your tax returns, and a personal interview with the board. It can take 2 or 3 months, but I may be able to help hurry the process along, depending on the building. And, of course, you already have living quarters here, if you're comfortable with that.
Of course I am.
Feel free to give this address as your own.
Thank you. May I hire you as my attorney?
Of course. I'm happy to have you for a client. And when you mention my name, always say that I'm with Woodman and Weld. That carries some weight around town.
I'll remember.
We'll likely dine with Dino and Viv this evening. I'll let you know about that.
I'll look forward to seeing them.
If you want an office to work from, Arthur Steele will arrange one in his building. You're entitled to that as a board member, when you're in town. If you buy a residence here, you'll have to make your own office arrangements, or, better yet, have a home office.
You're full of advice, Meg said.
If my friends would just follow my advice, Stone said, their lives would be so much richer, fuller, and happier.
Do your friends resist your advice?
Almost always.
Why? Because they think it can't be all that great if they're not paying for it.
I'll keep that in mind, Meg said. So far your advice has been impeccable.
I like that word, Stone replied.
Meg is on the move, Gino Bellini said to Veronica, holding up his iPhone. They were in the rental Mercedes driving down Park Avenue.
And just when we were about to pin her down, Veronica said.
Wait a minute.
They were stopped at a traffic light at 57th and Park. Gino pointed across the intersection.
She's right there, he said. She must be in the green Bentley.
The light changed and their driver moved on.
Make a U-turn as soon as possible. Gino said to their driver.
The driver did so.
Now step on it. Look for a green Bentley.
The driver moved into the right lane, which was clear for the moment, in order to catch up. A few blocks up Park, he did catch up, but the Bentley was in the left-hand lane, turning left.
"Shit!" Gino yelled.
"I'm sorry, sir. They switched lanes on me just as I was catching up to them."
"Can you figure where they're going?"
"They're driving west on 66th Street so they could either turn downtown on 5th Avenue or cross Central Park on that street."
Gino watched his iPhone.
"They've turned down 5th Avenue," he said. "How long to catch up with them?"
"No way of telling, sir, in this traffic."
"Oh, the hell with it," he said.
Gino's cell phone rang.
"Yeah?"
"It's Joe Cross,"
a man's voice said.
"Dirty Joe, how are you?"
"Not so good.
I missed another chance."
"I'm not surprised to hear it. She's in New York. What happened?"
"I caught her and this guy on a little island west of Key West, but the wind and water didn't cooperate, and they had a friend on another boat who was armed. We had to get out of there fast, and as it was, the guy put a bullet in my radar, an expensive repair."
"Add it to your bill," Gino said, "and get your ass to New York."
He gave the man his new address.
"Find a hotel nearby, and be at my place at 10 a.m. tomorrow."
"Done. Can I overnight a package to myself at your address?"
"Containing what?"
"Firearms. I can't buy them there, and I don't know yet where my hotel will be."
"Sure, you do that."
Gino hung up. "You're going to use him again?" Veronica asked.
"How many hitmen do I know?"
he whispered to her, conscious of the driver's big ears.
17. Meg returned to Stone's house a little after 5, and Fred hauled several shopping bags and boxes up to the master suite. Stone was at his desk, and he made them a drink from his office bar.
"A good day, I hope."
"A very good one. Tonight I'll be a new woman. You won't recognize me. In fact, I may be a new woman every night for a week."
"You bought that many clothes?"
"I did."
"Look at any apartments?"
"Didn't have time for that. Another day." "Where are we dining?"
"At Patroon, a favorite restaurant of ours. You'll like it."
"Can I dress to kill?"
"Sort of. It's not all that formal, though, so don't overdo it."
"You give such good advice," she said.
"Told you so."
Dirty Joe and Jungle Jane were packing for their trip.
"Did you get the weapons off?" she asked.
"On their way. They'll be at Gino's house."
"Where are we staying?"
Joe sat down on the bed and did some Googling.
"Best deal that's close to Gino's is the Lombardy on East 56th Street off Park Avenue. There's a suite available."
"Sounds good," she replied.
"Gino is paying anyway."
"I booked for a week. If we get it done, we can take a few days off, see a musical or something."
"How will I be armed?"
"The little .380. I'll have a .45, both with silencers and 3 magazines."
"Sounds good.
If Gino can nail her down, we'll both take her. She won't survive the crossfire."
"Good deal."
They were settled into a booth at Patroon, with drinks and menus before them.
"How was your day?" Viv asked Meg.
"Just lovely."
"How did your security detail work out?"
"They were perfect. I felt safe at all times. You do good work."
"Thank you, ma'am," Viv said.
"Did I tell you," Stone said to Meg, "that Strategic Services is the second largest security company in the world?"
"Nope."
"Who's the largest, Viv?"
"I keep trying to forget their name," Viv said.
"What's your job there?"
Executive VP for security. I used to be chief operating officer, but I didn't like the business side, so I asked for the change.
She's a happier woman since then, Dino said.
I worry less, said Viv. I didn't like thinking about the bottom line all the time. I just assemble the right teams for the work in hand.
Viv was quite a cop, Stone said. She saved Dino's life, took out an assassin, and on another occasion, she fired a single shot from a handgun at a terrorist driving a car packed with explosives from nearly a block away, and put the round through the back window and into the back of the driver's head. The bomb, if it had gone off, would have taken out a big chunk of Second Avenue. She got a medal and a big reward for that one.
I didn't know policemen could accept rewards, Meg said.
As it happened, she had resigned from the NYPD that morning to marry Dino later that same day.
Good timing, Viv, Meg said. Can an ex-cop carry a weapon in this city?
There are two sitting at this table, Stone said, not to mention one serving officer.
Once again, I'm well protected.
You also have an excellent steak knife handy if things get out of hand, Stone said.
Gino and Veronica Bellini glided to a halt in front of the restaurant.
Here we are, he said,
and he waited for their driver to open the door for them.
And how do you know this place?
I don't. I read about it in a novel.
The door opened and they went inside the restaurant, and Gino gave his name. They were escorted to a table against a wall and sat side by side with a good view of the whole place. Drinks and menus were delivered.
Holy shit, Gino said.
You put that so gracefully, Gino, Veronica said dryly. What does it mean?
Look across the room, center booth, under some photographs on the wall.
I see two couples having dinner.
Exactly. The blonde is Meg Harmon.
Veronica stared across the room.
Holy shit, she said softly. What do we do?
First of all, stop staring at them. Look anywhere else in the room but there.
Okay. Now what?
Tell me what you'd like for dinner.
A steak and a Caesar salad, she replied.
The head waiter materialized at their table and inquired if they'd like to order.
Two Caesar salads, two strip steaks, medium rare, Gino responded.
Would you like any vegetables?
Onion rings and green beans, Gino said.
The man handed him a wine list.
I'll be back in a moment to take your wine order.
He vanished.
Are you looking at them?
Gino asked.
I'm trying not to, Veronica replied. Look for other interesting faces in the room. Imagine who they might be.
The head waiter returned. Have you chosen a wine, sir? Gino glanced at the wine list at the high end of the price range.
A bottle of the Opus One, he replied.
An excellent choice. May I decant it for you?
Gino looked at him blankly.
The wine is 20 years old. It's likely to have some sediment at the bottom.
Yes, do that. Thanks.
I see an actor I recognize, Veronica said. But I can't think of his name.
Good. Keep checking him out until the name comes to you.
The head waiter returned with a bottle of wine in a basket, a candle, and a corkscrew. He uncorked the wine, sniffed the cork, and handed it to Gino, who aped him. The head waiter held the bottle with the candle under it and carefully poured the wine into a decanter. There, he said, and poured some for Gino to taste. Gino tasted it.
Yeah, okay.
The man poured two glasses.
I'll be back shortly to make your salads, he said, then went away.
Gino got out his cell phone, googled the Lombardy Hotel, and rang the number.
"Joseph Cross," he said to the operator.
"Hello?"
"You're in. Good."
"About 10 minutes ago," he said. "We're about to go out for dinner."
"Write this down. Patroon, 160 East 46th Street.
Call them and make a reservation, then get here as soon as possible. I'll call you after you're seated."
"Right,"
Joe said, then hung up.
"We've got a restaurant recommendation from Gino," he said to Jane.
18. The head waiter returned with a small cart, with a bowl and several ingredients on top. Gino and Veronica watched as he expertly mixed egg yolks, crushed garlic, oil, a little vinegar, anchovies, Parmesan cheese, and a teaspoon of mustard. When the mixture was smooth, he poured the dressing over torn leaves of romaine lettuce, sprinkled croutons on top, and served them.
"Great,"
Gino said, tasting a bite. Veronica approved as well.
"Here we go,"
Gino whispered, looking up at the entrance. Dirty Joe and Jungle Jane appeared at the dining room door, nicely dressed, and they were seated at a table to Gino's right, and ordered drinks. Gino tapped in Joe's number, and Joe picked it up.
"Yes?"
"You're sitting on the south wall," Gino said. "We're on the west wall. On the east wall, there is a table with four people sitting under some photographs. Got it?"
"I think so."
"The blonde is who you came to town to see."
"Got her,"
Joe replied.
"Now stop looking at her. They're already on their main course, so you don't order a starter. Eat something before they finish dinner. Then go outside and wait until they come out. Follow them and find out where she's staying."
"Gotcha. We don't have our tools yet."
"Don't do anything. Just follow her. When she's safely inside, you can go anywhere you like. Be at my place at 10 tomorrow morning."
"Gotcha."
Joe hung up. "So that's Dirty Joe?" Veronica asked.
"And his girl, Jungle Jane, the cleaned-up versions. We're not going to have to hunt down Meg. Joe will take care of that. Tomorrow, after he's armed, he can take care of her."
"Gino, you are so smart."
"Sometimes it's better just to be lucky. Tonight, we got lucky."
Stone and his party finished their dessert, paid the bill, and left the restaurant. Joe and Jane sat in a taxi, the motor running, and watched as the two couples got into a large black SUV.
"Driver," Joe said, "follow that car."
"Jesus," the driver said,
"what's wrong?"
"That's a cop car," he said, "and it's got the police commissioner's license plates. You want me to follow him?"
"Exactly. You can hang well back. I just want to see where the car goes."
They followed the SUV down to First Avenue, took a left on East 49th Street. The big vehicle continued across Second Avenue and stopped on the right, in the middle of the block. The cabbie stopped, too, well back.
"Well?"
he asked.
"We'll get out here,"
Joe said, handing the man a 20.
"Keep the change."
They got out of the car and walked slowly up the opposite side of the street as the occupants of the vehicle dismounted and went inside a townhouse. As Joe and Jane passed, he made a mental note of the house number.
"Got 'em," he said. "This is gonna be easier than I had thought."
Stone took his guests into his study and Fred brought them espressos, while they sipped cognac or Grand Marnier.
Gino's phone buzzed, and he glanced at the caller's number before answering.
What?
He said, then listened for a moment.
Are they still in sight? Okay, don't worry about it.
He hung up. What was that? Stone asked.
A cab followed us from the restaurant, and two people, a man and a woman, got out of it down the street and walked past your house. The guy appeared to write down your house number. Then they walked up to Second Avenue and got another cab.
Let me get this straight, Stone said. They got out of a cab down my block, then walked another block and got into another cab?
Right. And the guy wrote down your house number. My driver is an on-the-ball cop. I do not like this. Do you like it?
I do not like it, Stone said.
Wait a minute, Meg said. Is this about me?
Could be, Dino said. I don't think this one is about Stone.
There's something I didn't want to tell you while we were in the restaurant, Meg said.
All right, Stone replied.
Shoot. While we were having dinner, Gino and Veronica Bellini came into the place and were seated across the room from us, on the opposite wall.
Why didn't you speak up? Stone asked. I'd have liked to look at the guy.
Because I didn't want Gino to know I'd spotted him. Gino made a phone call, and a few minutes later, a couple came into the restaurant and were seated to my left, a few tables away. Gino made another call, and the man of the couple answered. Then both he and the woman took a good look at me, but only once. They ate something, but left before we did.
Describe the couple, Stone said.
The man was tall, maybe 6'3 or 6'4, and thin, with thick, curly salt-and-pepper hair, not recently cut. The woman was maybe 5'8 and curvaceous, and here's the thing, they were both deeply tanned.
Dino spoke up.
You're describing the people in the boat who shot at you.
I am, Meg replied.
I hope you're both wrong, Stone said.
I saw them in the boat, too, and neither of us is wrong, Dino replied.
And they were waiting outside in a cab when we left the restaurant and followed us.
Right, Dino said. And as soon as they had your address, they got into another cab and drove away.
This is disturbing, Bib said. She had not spoken until now. I think we're going to need someone in the house to answer the door if anyone calls.
Good idea, Dino said.
I think so, too, Meg replied.
Stone spoke up.
I have a better idea.
Let's hear it, Dino said.
I think we should get out of here early tomorrow morning and leave Dino's people to pick up this couple, if they drop by again.
And where would we go? Meg asked.
Maine is nice this time of year, Stone replied. And I'm running out of houses.
19. Stone and Meg had breakfast in bed, with Bob and Sugar playing on the rug nearby.
Why Maine? Meg asked.
They had been too busy exhausting each other the night before for her to ask.
Because I have a house there. It's convenient and secluded. On an island. Our only other option is L.A., and that's too far away.
How small an island?
The largest in Penobscot Bay, Stone said. The village is Dark Harbor, and it's big enough for shops and restaurants, and to fill out your wardrobe, if necessary. Otherwise, there's L.L. Bean.
I'd better pack, Meg said. What will I need?
Casual stuff. A sweater or a light coat for the evenings, which will be cool. I'm sorry you won't get to wear any of your new things. Save them for our return.
And when will that be?
When it's safe, Dino is going to put people in the block, and if the couple shows up again, they'll be arrested.
On what charge? They haven't done anything.
They've done something in Florida. They tried to kill us, and Dino can identify them. So can you, for that matter. But I was too busy ducking at the time.
Then why don't we just stay in the house until Dino's people arrest them?
Because we don't know when they'll show up. Today, tomorrow, or next week. They may even know that you made them, and if that's the case, they're going to be very cautious.
Then I'll pack, Meg said. Is there a washer and dryer at your place?
There is, and a housekeeper to operate them.
He picked up the phone.
I'll call them now and let them know to expect us. Seth can arrange for our second flight.
We have to change planes?
There's an airstrip on the island, but it's too short for my airplane. A smaller plane will take us from the Rockland Airport. It's a 10 or 15 minute flight.
I like small planes even less than bigger ones, she said.
I'll blindfold you.
He called Seth Hotchkiss at the main house and let Joan know they'd be leaving. You want to take one dog or two? She asked.
Doesn't Sugar have a mother?
You mean besides me? Yes, she does. But I had a call yesterday, and she won't be back for another few days. She begged me to keep Sugar, and it didn't take much begging.
Then this will be a two-dog trip. He hung up and picked up the Times.
Aren't you going to pack? Meg asked.
I have a wardrobe in situ. Fred loaded them into the Bentley while it was still in the garage, then drove quickly out, closing the garage door behind them, while Stone looked up and down the street. I don't see anybody, he said. An hour later, they were rolling down runway 1 and lifting off. After a departure procedure, they were pointed at Maine, and the flight to Rockland took little more than half an hour. Bob and Sugar sat on a rear seat each, looking out the window. When they turned off the runway at Rockland and taxied to the FBO, a Cessna 182 was waiting for them. They transferred Meg's luggage, emptied the dogs, and boarded, and they were soon flying at 1,000 feet over the largest and most beautiful bay in Maine, if not the world. Meg seemed entranced rather than frightened. "Maybe small planes are not so bad," she said. "That's Islesboro dead ahead," Stone said, pointing. "See the airstrip?"
"Oh, it's paved," she said. "I was expecting something more primitive like dirt."
"It's a very civilized runway. It's just short, only 2,450 feet. I once offered to pay for lengthening it another 1,000 feet, and the locals were horrified. They don't want jets flying in, and anyway, this is a small inconvenience."
They sat down on the Islesboro Strip and taxied to where Seth awaited, standing next to the house car, a 1938 Ford station wagon, beautifully restored. Stone introduced Meg, and Seth put her luggage into the car, then drove them to the house. "Oh," Meg said as they drove up, "it's bigger than I had expected."
"You expected a dirt runway and a tar paper shack?" Stone asked.
"Well, just something more rustic." She liked the interior, too, and the bedroom. Seth's wife, Mary, was introduced and asked their preferences for dinner. "It has to be lobster," Meg said. "I can never get enough lobster." Stone's cell phone rang and he answered it.
"Hi, it's Dino."
"What's happening?"
"They haven't turned up, but I've identified them."
"How the hell did you do that?"
"I had a sketch done, scanned, and sent to the Monroe County Sheriff's Office in the Keys. Somebody in the Isla Morada office recognized them immediately. One Joseph Cross
and his girlfriend Jane, no last name yet, known to the locals as Dirty Joe and Jungle Jane.
They're nothing if not colorful, Stone said.
He's let it be known that he's a retired businessman from San Francisco, Dino said. Nobody knows what business, but I can guess.
I expect it involves weapons, Stone replied.
That's my expectation, too. But the guy has no criminal record in California, Florida, or anywhere else. And we can't run a check on the girl without a last name.
Did you cross-check him with Gino Bellini?
Yeah, and no match.
Meg told me that Gino did some juvie time, but that could have been expunged if he kept his nose clean. Still, Gino and Dirty Joe could have met there and kept in touch.
Let's not take our guessing too far, Dino said.
Have you put out an APB on them yet?
That's too much of a stretch at this point, but we've checked the hotels and come up with nothing. Of course, they could have registered under an assumed name, if they have IDs and credit cards for that.
I wouldn't be surprised, Stone said. If the guy's a pro, he'll have all the tools.
Are you in Maine yet?
We're at the house.
I hope Meg likes it.
She was expecting a hovel, so anything would have impressed her. She's upstairs getting unpacked now.
Okay, I'll keep you posted. Go eat a lobster.
Will do. Stone hung up. 20. Dirty Joe and Jungle Jane arrived at Gino Bellini's apartment building and were sent up to the 29th floor in the elevator. A uniformed maid met them at the door and ushered them into the living room.
Wow, Joe said. What a view.
Nice, isn't it?
Gino replied.
Coffee?
There was a silver service on the table before the sofa.
Thank you. Both black,
Joe replied. They took a seat.
I assume you've tracked Miss Meg to the house.
We have.
Whose house is it? There's a brass plaque on the street-level door that says, The Barrington Practice, followed by Woodman and Weld.
Is the house owner's name Barrington?
That's our assumption.
Have you been to the house this morning?
We were there at 8 o'clock,
Joe replied,
for an hour and a half. Nobody left.
Then they must have left very early, Gino said, because they're not there anymore.
Then where are they?
Gino set an iPad on the coffee table.
They're in Maine, he said.
Maine?
Gino pointed at the blue circle on the Maine map.
On an island called Islesboro, in a town called Dark Harbor. How'd they get there so fast?
We had them at Teterboro Airport for most of an hour, so either her host has an airplane or they've chartered something. You're a pilot, Joe.
That's right. Jane and I both fly a Beech Baron.
Did you fly your airplane to New York?
No, we flew commercial. That's why I sent the tools to you.
So, rent an airplane and fly up there.
How do we find them? Joe asked. It's a very small town, a village, really. Ask around.
Joe shook his head.
Can't do that. When we get the job done, people will remember we were asking.
Gino zoomed in on the map.
The house is next door to the yacht club, he said, pointing. You got an iPhone?
Yes.
Then use that to find the house. Should be easy.
We'll need to book a room somewhere.
No, that's a problem. There used to be an inn on the island, but it's closed. I checked.
Then we'll have to be in and out on the same day.
There's an airfield there.
Joe got out his phone and Googled the island.
Short strip, 2,400 feet. That's good for light aircraft. Where can you rent an airplane?
Joe did some more Googling.
There's a Bonanza available at Teterboro, he said. But how are we going to get from the airfield to the house? Rent a car.
Joe shook his head.
If there's no inn on the island, I doubt if there'll be a car rental agency either.
He did some more Googling.
No, there isn't.
I recall that you've had some experience with stealing cars, Gino said.
You have a good memory. Let's hope we can find something near the airport, then.
Jane spoke up.
This is all too insecure, she said. We don't know who, if anyone, will be at the airfield. We don't know where the nearest car is to steal. In a small village, we stand too good a chance of being spotted and remembered. What we need to do is to spend a day or two on the island, get the lay of the land, find out where the fuck we're going, and how we're going to get back to the airfield after the job's done. We need to know if there are cops in the village, and if so, how many and how many cars.
Gino stood up, walked to the window, and gazed at the view for a moment.
You could rent a house or a cottage, he said. How about that? Not a good idea. We'd have to land on the mainland, rent a car, take a ferry, and meet a rental agent. We'd be seen by too many people coming and going.
How about this? Jane said. We do all that, then we leave the island without doing the job.
That kind of misses the point, doesn't it?
Gino asked.
Then we rent a boat and go back to the island. You said the house is next to the yacht club, so it's on the water, right?
Smart girl, Joe said. But why rent a house when we can just rent a boat? One we can sleep on, if necessary. Where are you going to rent a boat?
Gino asked.
It's Penobscot Bay, for Christ's sake, Joe said. The whole area is lousy with boats. We'll research it.
We should buy a rifle with a scope, Jane said. It's Maine. People hunt, so it shouldn't be a problem. We don't want to just walk up to the front door and shoot whoever opens it.
She's right, Joe said. The boat idea will work, but this is going to be a 3 or 4 day project, and it's going to be expensive.
I can afford it, Gino said.
He placed a stack of hundreds on the table.
Get it done.
Stone picked up the phone and dialed a local number. A gruff voice said,
"Who the fuck is this?"
"Hello, Ed," Stone said. "It's Stone Barrington. You free for dinner tonight?"
"Where?"
"My house."
"Are you having lobster?"
"Yes."
"I'm sick of fucking lobster. I'll bring my own steak."
"Not necessary. We possess a steak."
"Just you and me? Is that the best you can do?"
"Just you and me, and a pretty girl."
"That's more like it."
7 o'clock, if you want a drink first.
"Better your liquor than mine,"
Rawls said, then hung up.
"Who's coming to dinner?" Meg asked.
"Friend of mine, named Ed Rawls, lives on the island."
"What does he do here?"
"Whatever he likes. He retired from the CIA some years back, then moved here. There used to be a little group of ex-agency guys here, called themselves the Old Farts, but one by one they died off. Ed is the only one left."
"What's he like?"
she asked.
"Indescribable," Stone replied.
21. At precisely 7 o'clock, the doorbell rang, and Stone answered it.
"Good evening, Ed," he said, shaking the man's hand. "It better be," Rolls replied gruffly.
To get me out of my comfortable chair.
There's a comfortable chair right over there, Stone replied, nodding. Right next to the pretty girl. Meg, this is Ed Rawls. Ed, Meg Harmon. Rawls shook her hand.
Of Harmony Software?
Meg looked surprised.
That's right.
We get the Wall Street Journal up here, you know. The New York Times, too.
And I thought this was the far north, Meg said, laughing. I suppose you're on the Internet, too.
Couldn't live without it,
Rawls said, accepting a glass of Knob Creek from Stone.
I do most of my shopping online and all of my correspondence.
Ed is surprisingly computer literate, Stone said, for somebody as ancient as he is.
You'll be ancient one day, too, Stone,
Rawls said, raising his glass and taking a deep swig of the bourbon.
But not you, Meg.
You'd better not leave me alone with this guy, Stone, Meg said, laughing.
Damn right, Rawls replied. I'd have your knickers off before you knew it.
Stone laughed.
Ed, I think you've been spending too much time alone. Oh, I've got a widow stashed in Camden. Gets over to the island most weekends. I keep my hand in, so to speak.
Stone tells me you were CIA, Meg said.
Oh, I had a career full of that work until I got sent to prison.
Stone, you didn't tell me Ed was an ex-con, Meg said.
Damn right I am. I got life and did a few years of it until the truth came out and I got a presidential pardon. Now I'm back in everybody's good graces. Everybody who counts, anyway.
Rawls looked at Stone.
So, pal, what are you doing up here? Somebody after you?
He turned back to Meg.
Stone only comes up here when somebody is after him.
Not this time, Meg said. They're not after Stone. They're after me.
Who are they?
A guy who was once my business partner who thinks he should be as rich as I am.
Is this a shooting war?
Rawls asked.
I'm afraid it is, Stone said.
The ex-partner has hired somebody. If you see a couple around here, he's 6'3" or 6'4", skinny, curly hair, going gray. She's 5'8", with the usual equipment. Sing out, will you?
These people have names?
Dirty Joe Cross and Jungle Jane, no last name. He's a pro, but fortunately not the ultimate pro. He's tried twice and failed.
That's encouraging, Ed said. An inept assassin's not much good to anybody.
That's so, Stone agreed.
But if he keeps at it, Rawls said, sooner or later he'll get lucky. And lucky is just as good as good.
You're a pessimist, Ed, Meg said.
I'm so sorry, Rawls replied. Am I casting a shadow of gloom over the party? I hope the fuck so.
No, Ed, you're right, Stone said. We're taking precautions.
Well, this house is a good start as precautions go, Rawls replied. Has he told you about this house, Meg?
No, she said, but maybe it's time he did.
The house was built by my first cousin, Stone said. He was a higher-up in the CIA, so the agency took an interest in how it was built and contributed to its design and construction.
That means the framing is steel-clad, Rawls interjected, and the windows are bulletproof.
He left the house to a foundation that contributes to the welfare of the families of agents who died in the line of duty, Stone explained. But he also left me lifetime occupancy. Eventually, when I could afford it, I bought the place from the foundation.
And added it to the Barrington collection? Meg asked.
No, this was before the collection. It was my first second home.
We don't see near enough of him up here, Rawls said. Like I said, he only shows up when somebody's after him, or in this case, after you.
The tinkle of a silver bell interrupted them.
That's dinner, Stone said. Ed, I hope you're still taking your steak rare.
I like it too weak to move around, Rawls replied.
They went in to dinner. Jane let herself into their hotel suite and found Joe at the computer.
You find some clothes for Maine?
He asked her.
Enough.
What did you find?
I nailed down the Bonanza at Teterboro, he replied, and I found us just the right boat for charter in Rockland.
What kind of boat?
A Hinckley picnic boat, a 34-footer with a little galley and a double berth.
Fast?
It's got twin 320s, and it'll crank out 35 knots in a panic, a little less at cruise RPMs. The renters were impressed with my Coast Guard captain's license.
Is there a gun shop in Rockland?
Is there a town anywhere in this country where there isn't a gun shop?
Right, she said. What's our schedule?
We pick up the airplane at 9 a.m. I've booked a car and driver to get us to Teterboro. I'll have to do a little pattern work to show them I can fly the thing, but we'll be headed north before lunch.
How long a flight?
An hour or so, I guess. I've booked a rental car at the Rockland Airport. Then we'll take possession of the boat, and you can go gun shopping. We'll sleep aboard, then case Islesboro from the water the following morning.
And then?
And then we'll make a plan. Oh, one other thing. There's an operating quarry near Rockland. We might be able to put our hands on some explosives tonight. That will give us more options.
Options are a good thing, Jane said, but I'd settle for one clear shot at Miss Meg.
So would I, Joe replied.
22.
Stone, Meg, and Ed Rawls sat before a roaring fire and swirled the brandy in their glasses. The dogs lay in a pile in front of the fireplace. Ed was the first to speak.
"What precautions have you taken, Stone?"
Stone took a sip of his brandy.
"Precautions? We left New York City and came to Maine."
"Is that enough, do you think?"
"Yes," Meg chimed in. "Is that enough?"
"Well, let's see," Stone muttered. "We drove out of my garage at, 7:30 this morning? We drove to Teterboro and we weren't followed. We flew something over 300 nautical miles to Rockland, changed planes, then flew to an island in Penobscot, Maine, and we're sitting in a well-armored house drinking Remy Martin. Is that enough precautions?"
Ed shrugged.
"Maybe. How well do your pursuers know you?"
"Not at all, I hope."
"How did they find you to make the two earlier attempts on Meg's life?"
"Well, the first time they knew Meg was attending a Steel Group board meeting, and they probably checked the activities board at the Casa Marina Hotel and found out that she was on the list to play in a golf tournament, and there's only one golf course in Key West."
"And the second time?"
"They followed my boat from the Key West Yacht Club to some islands west of there."
"I didn't know you had a boat in Key West."
"I didn't until the day before we left."
"So how'd they ascertain that you were leaving on a boat for some island?"
"The yacht club is in plain sight of a main road. It would have been easy to spot us. Also, we stopped for fuel in Key West Bight, and we could have been seen there, then followed."
"Where'd you go?"
"Out to Fort Jefferson, about 70 miles west of Key West."
"How'd they know where you were going? A boat isn't like an airplane. You don't file a flight plan."
I suppose they followed us from a discreet distance. I wasn't looking for a tail.
Were you looking for a tail this morning?
I checked out the block as we drove away, and I didn't see anybody.
But somebody could have seen you leave.